Revealing secrets and the power of imagination and storytelling are some of the key ingredients in a new book by the Booker Prize-winning author Salman Rushdie. Luca and the Fire of Life tells the story of a young boy who enters a world of magic in a quest to save his father, a legendary storyteller named Rashid Khalifa, who has slipped into a deep sleep. Rushdie wrote the book for his youngest son, Milan, just as he wrote his other children's book, Harun and the Sea of Stories, for his older son. And Salman Rushdie joins us now in our studio. And Salman Rushdie, great to have you back to Here and Now. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thank you.
So we've just given a bare bones of the plot, but let's fill in a few more details without giving away the story. Mm-hmm. In the book, your young hero is on a quest. Tell us about the quest.
Well, you know, it comes out of the fact that he's the child of his father's old age. Or that's to say, his father's already 50 years old when he's born, and the fire of life in him is beginning to burn low. You know, and there's a moment where Luca is really worried because he sees his father literally slowing down, just making physically slower movements, and speaking more slowly, and so on. And he worries that his father's going to just stop, and there's a point where the father falls into this coma-like sleep, and because he's a storyteller's son, he knows, because his father's told him all his life, that just to the right of our world, if you can stumble into it, there's this more magical world of imagination and fantasy and dream. And if you could get into that, at the heart of that, there is this thing, the fire of life. And if you can bring that back, you can save your father's life. So he sets out to do that.
Now, I want to talk a little bit about what happens in this story. But first, why you wrote this book? I gather you were under orders to do so.
Yeah, well, my younger son, Milan, read the book I wrote for his brother, Harun and the Sea of Stories. He must have read it when he was 9 or 10 or something, and immediately began a major campaign, you know, to insist on the justice of having a book of his own. What he didn't know is that I always intended to do it. Hmm. That's actually from the moment he was born. I thought, okay, well, you know, maybe this will allow me to write a second book, because I'd enjoyed writing Harun and the Sea of Stories so much. But I knew that one of the reasons for enjoying it was that it was written for a specific child, you know, and I thought, when the second one grows up, I can do another one. So it was already in my head, but I allowed him to feel that he'd won a great victory.
A reasonable request.
Yeah.
At the heart of this book, one of the themes is clearly the love of a father for his young son. And I'm wondering if you could just read a passage that I think speaks to that. This is the one that begins on the top of page 10.
Yeah. This is also about the fact that, you know, he's a surprisingly late arrival in his parents' life. Mm. Luca had first amazed people just by getting born, because his brother Harun was already 18 years old when his mother Saraya, at the age of 41, gave birth to a second fine young boy. Her husband Rashid was lost for words, and so, as usual, found far too many of them. In Saraya's hospital ward, he picked up his newborn son, cradled him gently in his arms, and peppered him with unreasonable questions. Who'd have thought it? Where did you come from, Buster? How did you get here? What do you have to say for yourself? What's your name? What will you grow up to be? What is it you want? He had a question for Saraya, too. At our age, he marveled, shaking his balding head, what's the meaning of a wonder like this? Rashid was 50 years old when Luca arrived, but at that moment he sounded like any young greenhorn father flummoxed by the arrival of responsibility and even a little scared. Saraya took the baby back and calmed its father down. His name is Luca, she said, and the meaning of the wonder is that we appear to have brought into the world a fellow who can turn back time itself, make it flow the wrong way, and make us young again.
That's so lovely. So a story about an older father, a legendary story with legendary storytelling abilities. A young son arrives to save him. I gather this theme of fatherhood, mortality, has a certain resonance for you.
Well, I mean, it's just, you know, I was 50 when my son was born. And I think, you know, if you have a child later in life, then the subject of you know, existence, of being and not being, is just present. You know, I remember thinking when he was born that when this kid is 20, I'll be 70 years old. And, you know, you want to be around to watch your children grow up and to help them grow up.
Sure.
But it's a, you know, it's a subject in a way that it's not a subject when you have a child when you're 25. You know, so yes, I thought that would be the engine for this book, is to actually consider the question of mortality, to take on the subject, you know, for a child, from a child's point of view, of possibly losing a parent and not being ready to do that.
Mm. So you wrote it for your son. I'm curious to know, what did he think of the book? Did he get a chance to read it before it was published?
Yeah, he was the first reader.
He was the first reader.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. It wouldn't exist right here. It wouldn't be here if it hadn't passed the test. You know, so, and in fact, he helped me precisely on this question of life and death, because obviously, you know, you wonder about broaching that subject to younger readers. And there is a character in the book who is a sort of angel of death figure called Nobo Daddy, mm. A name I stole from William Blake. In William Blake's case, it's a name for God, but in my case, it's more of a name for death, really. But I worried that he's quite scary. You know, mm. he's literally sucking the life out of Luca's dad.
So you're concerned that he'd be too scary?
That he might be too frightening. Yeah. You know? And because I think, you know, we all know that children like the bad guy and are quite deliciously, you know, attracted to violence, but not to evil. But he read it and it was his favorite character.
That's great. That's great. So scary, but just scary enough for him.
Yeah.
We're talking with author Salman Rushdie about his new book, his 11th novel, Luca and the Fire of Life, which he wrote for his young son. And Salman Rushdie, we mentioned that you wrote this for a 13-year-old child, but this book also works really well for adults. It is a story of adventure and magic and animals, a dog named Bear and a bear named Dog, and they talk. But there are also these themes of parental love, mortality, and so on. I'm wondering, if you wrote the book, did you think that you were writing on two levels, essentially, an adult story as well as a children's story?
I did think so, yes. And one of the pleasures of the earlier book of Harun and the Sea of Stories had been that, you know, grown-ups were able to come at it from one direction and get, you know, like one set of satisfactions, and children from another direction. And I hoped that I could do that again, because it seemed to me that many of the books that the children's younger readers' books that I most admired, such as, of course, transcendently, the two Alice books, do exactly that. That, you know, an adult reads Alice in Wonderland and reads in a way a different book than a child reads. I also thought that the movies do it all the time. Hmm. You know, there's a whole range of movies now, you know, from Star Wars to Avatar, where you don't really ask yourself whether they're for kids or for grown-ups. Hmm. There they are, and everybody can go and get what they want from them. And so I thought, if I could do that, that would be good. And I think the form of the fable is like that. If you can use this kind of fable, folkloric language, then it's a way of saying, in many ways, quite complicated things in quite a simple way.
Hmm. I'm wondering, too, when I interview authors, sometimes they will tell me that their readers will discover ideas and themes in the books that they didn't even realize were there, they being the writers themselves. When you had your son read this book for the first time, did he surprise you in any way with his responses?
Well, I was surprised by his fearlessness, is the whole thing. You know, given that the theme of the book is life and death, the fact that he took that on so matter-of-factly, you know, and it struck me that these days, boys and girls aged 12, 13 are really not as innocent as we were, certainly as I was at that age. You know, they face a lot of stuff, and there's a lot coming at them in their daily lives, you know, and the maturity, I guess, with which he approached the book was really quite impressive to me.
Hmm. Now, there's a point in the book, too, where you're blending a sort of storytelling tradition with the modern video game. And again, mm-hmm. I don't want to give too much away, but at a certain point, Luca, in his adventures, is actually inhabiting a video game.
Yes.
Why the video game? I mean, tell me how that sort of fits into your view of the story.
Well, partly just for playful reasons. Sure. I mean, it's a thing that has, in the 20 years between these books, that whole culture of virtual reality has grown so large and so rich in some ways that it's available, I think, to storytelling and hasn't been used much. Also, if you look at the format of a lot of video games, it mirrors, and I think quite deliberately mirrors, the format of ancient quest narratives. You know, that if you look at, it's not often that one gets to use Super Mario and Pilgrim's Progress in the same sentence.
Right.
But if you look at the way in which a quest like Pilgrim's Progress or like the Grail quest, you know, is structured, it's very similar. You have to go through different zones of ordeal, you know, mm-hmm. different levels of adversary, mm-hmm. and you have to defeat them in order before you could get to the next valley or the next monster or whatever it might be. And only by going through that process of increasingly complicated challenges can you get to your goal. And clearly people who devised these games have studied that. So it was a way for me to use a very kind of now language or set of metaphors to reinvigorate what is, after all, one of the very oldest stories that human beings have told, which is the story of the quest for fire.
I wanted to ask you about that, the quest for fire. It really is. It's been handed down again and again from culture to culture.
Yeah. Every single culture. When I was reading around this book, I discovered it was really impressive that literally any culture in the world that you look at will have that story, whether it's Chinese or Native American or Greek or Indian or wherever you look. This is one of the central stories of the human race, you know, and obviously because acquiring fire was one of the things that made us what we are. And in this, of course, the fire represents more than just something that keeps you warm. It represents life, it represents passion, it represents creativity, and so on. So the quest for fire is a quest for all those things.
It seems like it's a quest for stories, too. I mean, I almost feel like fire and the sort of reverence with which you treat the story and storytelling are almost the same here.
Yeah, there's a moment early in the book where Luca makes a kind of slip of the tongue and refers to something as being only a story. And is actually told off by the bad guy, by Nobo Daddy, who says to him, you know, you of all people, as a storyteller's child, you should know better than to call something only a story. You know, and he makes this, he has this phrase, which I think is very important to the book, where he says, you know, man is the storytelling animal. You know, and it's true, I think, we are the only creatures in the world who do this. Nobo Daddy asks, you know, do rats tell tales? Do porpoises have narrative purposes? Do elephants elephanticize? No, they don't. You know, man alone. And this is one of the things I wanted the book to communicate, is how important it is to us as human beings, the business of telling and receiving stories.
And yet it seems as though that you're almost poking fun at yourself. I mean, the storytelling father in the book calls himself the Shah of Blah,
yeah.
And the Ocean of Notions, which I love.
Well, the Ocean of Notions is when you like his stuff, and the Shah of Blah is what he gets called by people who don't like it so much. It's the good and bad review.
What's next for you? Are you going to write a third children's book? I mean, have you fallen in love with this format?
I do like it very much. You know, I like it also because the kind of response you get from younger readers is so interesting and, you know, always enjoyable. So, yeah, and I'm a sort of believer in the rule of three. You know, I think if you've written two of something, you probably should write a third. But immediately I'm writing something else. I'm writing a memoir next.
Autobiographical memoir.
Yeah.
We're looking forward to that. I wish we had more time right now to talk to you about that, but we don't, so please come back.
Thank you. I'll be back.
That's Salman Rushdie. He's author of Luca and the Fire of Life. To read an excerpt from the book, you can go to our website, hereandnow.org. And Salman Rushdie, thanks again for coming in.
Thank you.